This is Pastor Dean Proctor from Queensway Baptist Church in Brantford, Ontario, Canada. You're listening to a podcast of one of our latest sermons. At Queensway, we seek to impact lives for Jesus in this generation and in generations to come. As you listen to this podcast, we trust you'll be blessed. So I want to start this part two of the series of the book of Proverbs that we're working through, and I want to start with this question. The answer is not parenting. The answer is not the in-laws, although that's a good answer, but it's not the right answer. It's not even anything else that you might be thinking about this morning. Finances. The majority of arguments in marriage center around money. There was a study that just came out that backed this up. It's called the BDO Canada Affordability Index. And all that is it's a survey that examines how affordable life in Canada is. And this study came back and it said that 53%, okay, so over half of all Canadian residents live paycheck to paycheck. One paycheck away from going down. 53%. 25%, one in four, reported that the debt load that they carry is overwhelming to them, crushing. 25% being squashed by debt. And 27% reported that they don't have enough even to meet their daily needs. 27%. And so it's those stressful realities. You can appreciate how they come into the house, they come into the marriage. That's just stressful to live constantly under that kind of weight and under that kind of pressure. It sucks energy, it sucks hope, and our daily lives just become one big hamster wheel month after month after month, just trying to tread water and keep our heads above water. Well, we live in a time where it seems like wisdom and finances are detached from one another. But the book of Proverbs, this book of wisdom that we're studying in this series, it's actually an amazing place to get some perspective on money because the book of Proverbs speaks so often about the topic. So this morning, I need you to do one thing for me as we're exploring this topic of money in Proverbs. I need you to set to the side the fact that the preacher who gets paid by the church is preaching about the importance of how to use money. Set that aside. Because this is more about what the book of Proverbs says to all of us about how our finances ought to be prioritized. I think it's good wisdom to talk about finance. We certainly see in the New Testament tons of times that Jesus spoke about the appropriate use of finance and stewardship. But I want to give you this jumping off verse this morning, and I hope that this discussion is a frank and an honest one that actually provides you with some hope and provides you with some energy in responding to the financial realities in your life. So the jumping off verse is from Proverbs 30, verses 7 to 9. The writer asks two things of God in this chapter, in this verse, pardon me, chapter 30, verses 7 to 9. Two things I ask of you. Here's the first one. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Two, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. This may be an obvious point, but actually it's quite a complex thing to try and sort through. But the book of Proverbs repeatedly teaches us that more money is not the answer to money problems. It just isn't. And we can look around our own city right now, and we can observe tent cities that have been erected in response to homelessness, in response to poverty. And simply, money won't solve that. That's a systemic issue that is quite complex and needs a lot more attention than it's getting. The wisdom of Proverbs says simply more money is not the solution to money problems. Poverty comes with its own set of unique challenges, dangerous temptations. And yet so does wealth. Wealth comes with its own unique challenges and dangerous temptations too. The Apostle Paul says to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6:10, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs." And that earlier passage from Proverbs 30, precedes that, anticipates that truth that Paul is saying to Timothy. It shows the writer crying out to God, saying, "I don't want to be in want, but I also don't want abundance. Because if I'm in want, I know myself enough, I'm going to behave desperately and I'm going to do things that dishonor the name of God. And if I have too much, I know I'm going to, will become self-sufficient, self-promoting, and even forget that it came from God." So that sweet spot that the writer of Proverbs 30 is pointing us toward is that middle ground, not too much, not too little. In North America, we have much. Now, I don't want us to feel guilty about that this morning. That's not the point. This is where God has planted us. This is where we are. Now, how do we respond to that? Because there's a condition in North America rooted in wealth and material possessions called affluenza. North America has an epidemic of affluenza. I would suggest that I see it in our own neighborhood surrounding our facilities here as well. How it plays out is that we have so much material wealth around us. We have every material need we can imagine at our disposal. Why do I need God? I have everything. I have everything that will satisfy me, and if I don't have it, Amazon will get it to me tomorrow. So what do I need God for? That's the challenge in front of the church in an era of affluenza. We have lots of stuff. Doesn't make us happy. We actually should be shooting for holy. So in between too much and too little is this sweet spot that the writer of Proverbs 30 longs for. Feed me with the food that is needful for me. Just what I need, God. Just my daily bread, God. This is Jesus' teaching in the New Testament from Matthew chapter 6. It's coming right out of this teaching from Proverbs 30. Just enough for today, Lord. As Jehovah Jireh, the God who provides, I'm going to trust you for what I need for just today. That's all I ask. So more money, more material goods, more wealth, more affluence, it's not the solution to money problems. Too much money is a problem. Too little money is a problem. And in the book of Proverbs, over and over again, we're told that, frankly, money is very limited. I mean, it's necessary, but there's so much it can't do. Money is not everything. Amassing wealth for wealth's sake is actually destructive. Withholding what you have in excess from someone who desperately needs it brings you a curse. It's actually a radical and absolute generosity of heart that is the point of our daily lives, and Proverbs directs us to it over and over and over again. Proverbs 3:27 says, "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it's in your power to do it." Be generous. Proverbs 11:24-26, "One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and one who waters will himself be watered. The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it." Be generous. Proverbs 22:9, whoever has a bountiful eye will be blessed, for he shares his bread with the poor. And verses 22 and 23 of the same proverb, do not rob the poor because he is poor, or crush the afflicted at the gate, for the Lord will plead their cause and rob of life those who rob them. Finally, whoever gives to the poor will not want, but he who hides his eyes will get many a curse. I mean, proverb after proverb, and we could spend all morning reading the number of times that this book of wisdom reminds us of the appropriate use of what we've been entrusted with and inappropriate use of what we've been trusted with. The book points us toward generosity and not stinginess. God blesses generosity, not stinginess. God is generous, and he's abundantly generous. And as his creation meant to reflect his image, so should we be. Generous in our time. Generous in our encouragement. I've come to learn, and it took a lot in my adult life to figure this out, because it's not how I was raised. I was raised in a culture of he who dies with the most toys wins. You just, if you got one, two is better. And if you've got two, then three is better. And I was talking, I had the privilege of officiating a funeral for my cousin on Friday, so some of the family were all standing around and talking about, you know, he's got six motorcycles. How many do you think he can ride at any given time? Why? Why is that? And it comes out of having my parents' generation having grown up not having anything. And somewhere along the line making a vow that I'm never going to go back to that. So if I have one bike, two is better. Three is even more. Four is more than you got. And then five, and then six. It's never enough. But there's great freedom when you realize you don't own anything at all. That it's all God's. That everything is his. I came into the world, no material goods. Nothing. I go out of the world, no material goods. In between time, whatever I think I have, whatever I think I've bought, whatever I think I've earned, whatever I've hoarded, whatever I've treasured, whatever I've possessed, whatever I've shared, it was all God's. All of it. There's great freedom in that. It's not on me. It's on him. He's the owner. I'm just the steward. Proverbs makes it clear as we go through that book that there are actually so many more things more valuable than money. What's more valuable than money? 31 chapters of the book of Proverbs, and item after item, wisdom, better than money. Humility, better than money. Friendship, better than money. Righteousness, better than money. And most importantly in this book, the fear of the Lord, more valuable than money. In page after page, as we go through this book of Proverbs, it delivers a clear message. Money can't satisfy you. And it is not the ultimate. It is necessary. You can't, you know, take chickens to the bank like you used to. It is necessary. But it's a tool. It's an instrument. And it's God's instrument. Wisdom warns us there's a great danger in being greedy for things that aren't our property. Proverbs 11:28, those who trust in their riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. Proverbs 13:11, dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. Proverbs 14:31, whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. And finally, in these examples this morning, Proverbs 15:27, the greedy bring ruin to their households, but the one who hates bribes will live. So greed, stinginess, as opposed to radical generosity, anything that leads us to withhold from someone in need what we have in abundance, it oppresses. Greed oppresses the poor. Greed creates division and conflict. It fuels covetousness. He has three motorcycles. I want four. It's covetousness. Greed holds out the promise of fulfillment, but you never actually get there. They keep moving the pin. Your first million becomes, now I want two. Now I want three. John D. Rockefeller is recognized as one of the most wealthiest Americans of all time, the richest person in modern history. And there's a lot of things that Rockefeller did and said that I wouldn't quote on a Sunday morning. But this one, I thought, speaks to our point here. Rockefeller himself said, if your only goal is to become rich, you'll never achieve it. If that's your goal, it's a black hole. You can't fill it. You'll never be satisfied because you'll always want more. Whereas the Christian worldview says that God's grace is enough. I have everything that I need in God's grace through Jesus Christ. His grace is enough. Wisdom in the book of Proverbs reveals relentlessly that the greedy will end up poor in every sense of the word, while the generous will grow rich in ways that exceed just simply wealth. And if we want to see that in action, I just say look no further than the life of Jesus. The long-awaited king who chose in obedience to live in poverty. Essentially homeless as he moved from location to location during his earthly ministry. Matthew's gospel records Jesus saying this in chapter 8, verse 20. Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. When we're talking about money, it's verses like these that point out the emptiness of what is called in Christendom the prosperity gospel. The prosperity gospel presents that the way that God blesses, demonstrates his blessing for you is he gives you stuff. Health and wealth and great relationships. And that's how you know that God is blessing you, because you'll prosper. Except that that gospel makes no room for Jesus. I don't want a gospel that has no room for Jesus. That gospel has no room for Jesus. God blesses you when you have a lot of material goods. What did Jesus have? God blesses you when you have great relationships. People wanted to kill him. His own family thought he had a demon. He didn't have houses. He didn't have wealth. He didn't have any of that stuff. And so the prosperity gospel would say, well, then somebody in that situation isn't in the will of God. But the fact is, Jesus was in that situation simply because he was precisely in the will of God, because he chose in obedience not to grasp a hold of divinity, but to make himself nothing, it says in Philippians 2, to take the very form of a human and become a servant all the way to the cross. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 8, 9, though he was rich, Jesus, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich, spiritually rich. In humility, Jesus gave up his life that we might be made rich in righteousness. He laid down what was rightfully his to hold on to, that we would gain an eternal inheritance. That's generosity in real life. God is generous. God loves generosity. And again, whether that's through the generous gift of time, listening to someone, the gift of skills, helping fix, make, create something, the putting forward of whatever resources are needed for ministry to continue, even if it's through a car wash. When we're generous, wisdom makes us sacrificial in our everyday lives because Jesus was. So as we close, and as we turn our minds now to the Lord's table this morning, I want to invite you to pray with me, because I want to ask God to do whichever one is needed in each of us this morning, either to reawaken a spirit of generosity or to implant a spirit of generosity. And that any fear or any greed that would point us toward stinginess, that would be wiped away, and that our everyday lives would look all the more like the image of Jesus. So will you pray with me?